Hey guys, welcome back to another podcast. Today we have our very first ever guest. We really wanted someone that is amazing and special and just, you know, would really take the first guest as like a real wow. But unfortunately, they couldn't make it today.
We all knew that was coming, didn't we?
So we've got my dad. Yay!
We've got Petey Pie, as I affectionately call him, among Petey other Pie. Names.
Yeah, that's just the good names.
How do you feel about coming on the podcast, being a first guest? Bit of pressure?
A little bit of nerves going on here. The only time I've ever had a microphone in front of me is when I was singing before. But
and Pete is actually such a good singer, isn't he? So the thing is, right, I remember this because your family love karaoke, not so much Sarah, but Emma and Pete love karaoke. And you were like, my dad always wins a karaoke contest and my sister Emma always comes second. Mm. And I was like, yeah, all right, always. We went to that caravan park and there was a big competition and there were some great singers. Your dad came first, your sister came second. Always. And it's literally like...
It was like our childhood. When we talk about our childhood and we always go to caravan, did you just burp on the mic?
No, I cleared my throat.
Oh, no.
He's like, brr.
All right. Nerves gone. Yeah. Nerves are gone.
Went to a fart.
Anyway, I was saying, when we were younger, we'd go to caravan holidays, that was it. It was like, maybe that's why we didn't fly, because they didn't have karaoke competitions.
Abroad.
But yeah, we used to go.
And that's the only way we got holidays. I used to win them.
If you win them, because you could go back and be in the finals.
But it was in September and cold and very few people there. And all the holiday shops were shut.
So yeah, but it's still a good holiday.
It was
good.
You sang at our wedding and it was unbelievable, wasn't it? The atmosphere in there.
Oh, I was so nervous. That was the first and only time that I can honestly say I was so nervous.
Why? That's
because,
so funny.
Because it was so important to me. It was so important that I did a good job. I was so revved up for such a good day. And it was, wasn't it?
It was.
So it was good. A beautiful day.
When you finished singing, everyone, because when you were singing, we hadn't even eaten yet. And everyone was like waving their napkins. And as soon as you finished, everyone was just chucking their napkins at you. It was like.
In a good way.
Super.
Not like a boom. It's like Tom Jones with Snickers.
It absolutely revved me. Like, you know, I was absolutely boosted. When you were throwing all the napkins, it was just absolutely joy.
That's one of the highlights of the wedding day for me.
So good.
But yeah, I was going to say, we talk a lot on here about Sarah's childhood and stuff like that. And it's quite nice to... You and Roz have been mentioned quite a bit on this podcast. So I feel like people probably feel like they already know you a little bit.
I watched the podcast myself and I hear... Our names come out sometimes.
Well, now you can defend yourself.
I mean, well, yeah. I'm not as good at you as answering battle repartee. You're pretty good. You're like Roz. You and Roz going at the repartee at each other. It's very funny.
Although that's what Mum said. The last episode you said about the clubs that you didn't get to go to because you were poor. Well, there was free ones and you didn't want to go to them. You never wanted to go to a club. You could have gone to Brownies.
You could have gone Brownies.
Yeah.
You could have gone Brownies.
Yeah.
What's worse than a girl guide in your pocket?
Brownie in your pocket.
A brownie in your pants.
Not in your pocket.
You make that one up.
I'd like to say I did, but I've been holding on to that one for years. But yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so let's do a little background check. Let's check he's all right. No, let's talk about my dad's, his many job titles that he's had over the years. Like, we always joke about dad's CV, that it'd be like...
Like a scroll.
The trouble is, I flitted around like a butterfly in jobs. Probably it was actually quite a sad reason, if I'm being really honest. When I left school, I couldn't read or write that well. I've only just realised that I'm quite majorly dyslexic. But I think I went from job to job. Really, I wanted to get as many qualifications as I could because I was embarrassed. When you were young, I was very embarrassed. I always was dressed in my bus uniform. I was a bus driver when I was young. When you were young, I was a bus driver. And I used to be standing at your school and sort of collecting you or taking you to school. And I was always in my uniform and looking at other people and thinking, I bet they're accountants, solicitors, you know, and I'm just a bus driver. And I think I learned a lot about reading and writing when I went to Nescot Plumbing College. You know, I did the plumbing college. And I learned a lot about reading and writing then, I suppose. I got better at it. Every Tuesday it was theory, and you had to do all this writing about the bylaws and all the rules and all the tools that you use to do the jobs. And it was like really difficult to start with. That first year was absolutely awful, but I had a brilliant tutor, and that's what made me want to be a tutor. This guy called Bob Boyce, he wrote books on plumbing, and he sussed out that I was struggling, and he sort of really helped me and done a pre-read for me to read before I went, and always gave me encouragement. And it made me want to be a teacher in some way. And that's when I started becoming a teacher. I became a driving instructor. And I've done so many jobs. I've been a transport manager. I've been an operations manager of transport firms. But the training has run through like a thread through my whole life. I've always been a trainer, that I go back to it. You know, I become a manager in something and then I go back to it. I've got so many.
Yeah, I've always seen with you, like, it's like you kind of, you take on a new job or you get a new kind of qualification or something. And then it's like you always want to improve. You always want to keep moving forward and you want to do stuff. But also, like, even because obviously you've done all those jobs, you said you were a chauffeur at one point. Butcher. I mean, the list goes on. A DJ.
Yeah.
Doing weddings, parties and stuff like that. And then also not even just in work, but in your actual personal life, because you volunteered, like you became a voluntary policeman.
Nine years I was a special constable.
I was going to say he was a special something.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then you did first response.
First responder. Even saved someone's life. Well, you've saved more than one person's life, but...
I mean,
you got commended for saving someone's life.
Yeah, I went up and met him after a year, and he had 9 cardiac arrests, and I was first on scene. And this man was absolutely incredible. He was half the size. He was quite large when this happened, but a year later, he'd been on a pilgrimage back in Pakistan or somewhere, and he'd lost half of his weight, where he'd been sort of living a better diet and life and exercised. That man had 9 cardiac arrests that day.
Wow.
And we shocked him first 4 times, and each time he actually came back and pushed me off of his chest. I was doing CPR on him, and the first 3 times he pushed me off his chest, and then he went unconscious each time, but it brought him back. And a year later, it was a bit of a surprise. We were asked by our boss, me and my colleague, asked to just appear at the head office in Waterloo, because I was working for London Ambulance at the time. And they opened this door, and I thought, I recognise that guy. Why do I recognise him? And it was this chap. Aww. And he ran out to us and kept calling us his angels. Aww. And it was all in the papers and things, and which I don't know how it got in the papers. It wasn't by me. I didn't do it. But
You told me to write in and let them know about it. Yeah. See if you could get a mention in the paper. Yeah. No, it's incredible, because I think one of the things I was going to say is it's not just in work. It's not like it was never come across like it's chasing money, because there's some of the most incredible things you've done is outside of any paid work, like saving people's lives. And I find it amazing.
Well, I did 9 years with the police, voluntary, Surrey police. I really enjoyed that. But we might get to talk about Mickey. But after Mickey passed away, I found myself not being that true police officer. I was being a bit, I don't know, angry with people. And I thought, that's not me. And I went to a training session for first aid, where you have to have your first aid at work refreshed if you're a trainer, because I used to teach first aid as well. And a guy said, "You're a blue light driver, aren't you?" I went, "Yeah." He said, "Are you still a police officer?" "No, I'm not. No, I packed that up." He said, "Well, London Ambulance are looking for this. They do an absolute brilliant scheme called the Emergency Responder Scheme. Absolute brilliant. It's run by like managers of the ambulance service, but it's operated by volunteers, and it's pure volunteers. You don't get any money for it, and they give the time up, and it's and they're all in the same colour uniform, so you the public out there wouldn't really know that they're voluntary, and it doesn't matter anyway because they're trained to a very good degree." Mm-hmm. And, you know, superb scheme, absolute superb scheme. I was very, very proud. And I needed to be maybe doing something good for people rather than, you know, questioning people and yeah. arresting people. I didn't want to be that person anymore. I found I wanted to be yeah. nice and yeah. And do some good.
Even though when Joel said he first met you and he was a bit scared of you, what he said is he realised that you're a big softy. You are. You're a nice person. Everyone that meets you knows you and loves you.
He's lovely, isn't he?
He is.
Big softy. But also, I think what would be good is while we've got you on the podcast, like, what was Sarah like as a kid?
What
happened in our childhood that made her the way she is?
We ain't got time for that today.
Well, I used to teach martial arts and I had my own clubs and all of my children, except one, Sarah. was in my class. Even Roz, your mum, used to come along and train with us. So there's a whole family thing. So we've got Sarah now. I've spoke her into coming along, and she's at the front of the class because the beginners go at the front, and as you get
sounds embarrassing it already. Why put them at the front?
Yeah. Well, she was talking, and I was like the sensei, and I was said to her like, stop talking, like, and she carried on. So I said, right, 10 press-ups, Sarah. She went, no. And she just shook her head, no. I went, Sarah, 10 press-ups. Now I've got my other instructor watching me. I'm thinking, I'm the gaffer here. Get down and do 10 press-ups, please.
Please. Please. Please.
I didn't say please to her, but I'm saying it in my head. and she went, no, no. I went, Sarah, 10 press-ups now. She went, fuck you. And I went outside and I made out to be really, really cross. But I went outside and I absolutely peed my pants with laughter. I thought it was so good.
How old was she?
And I never went back again.
No, not surprised. Your dad didn't want you back again.
He did.
Embarrassing.
He wanted people with strength and courage like that.
Spirit.
Spirit.
Let me tell you.
How old was she?
How old were you about?
It was before I met you, so I must
have. Yeah, it was about 12, 13.
Feisty one.
Yeah.
Oh, well, she don't need martial arts, as you've just found out, haven't you?
Yeah.
Through life.
Yeah, sometimes I do blame her upbringing for the way she
was. So was I a bit like Chloe?
Yeah, but I suppose you was.
I wasn't naughty.
No.
I wasn't naughty. And that obviously, like, I know obviously it wasn't right, but I was obviously embarrassed. I was obviously very embarrassed about that.
You was very cheeky. Used to absolute get, oh. You when I'm telling you off, oh, you was a sod. You'd laugh and make me more cross with you.
Yeah.
And then you and Emma would just burst in and laughter.
Yeah, but the thing is that we'd be naughty, whatever, and then you would tell us off for laughing, and then you would send the pair of us to sit on the stairs together. So then we're in hysterics laughing with each other, and then we got in more trouble for laughing. And then all of a sudden, Emma would decide, like, snap, she's out of it, and she can now not laugh. And I'm still laughing the way I laugh, and she's now cross at me. So I've got you shouting at me, her shouting at me, like, all telling me to stop laughing. And the more you're shouting at me, the more I'm laughing.
That's when you bring in your mum.
Yeah.
And that's when all the laughter ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
You wouldn't play your mum up like that, would you?
No.
No.
No, she's... your mother was very, very good with you all.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
I know I say this because we always joke about like our childhood, but I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change, like, I am just the same mum as mum is.
Because the thing is, right, and we've had this conversation, I can even see the look on your dad's face, like, you've said this before, like, you almost feel, what's the word? It's like you feel embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed.
You feel embarrassed that you brought the kids up and you guys didn't have a lot of money. And I always say it, and you and Sarah always says it, it's like she wouldn't change a thing. She
really
had the best childhood and money was never an issue.
It's made me who I am today. Like, genuinely, I feel...
I'm sorry, John.
Yeah, so that's the issue.
I'm sorry about that.
No, jokes aside, like, okay, like, we didn't have money, but you was there when we had dinner every night, even if you then went out and did a disco because you was a DJ in the evenings. Like, you was around. Like, you just taught me that family is the most important. And
I was embarrassed.
I think that's the most valuable lesson.
I always believed in family, but that was probably due to a lot of it was due to a sad time when we lost Anthony, our first son.
I don't think we've ever mentioned that, but yeah, sadly lost two
boys. Yeah. Anthony, that was 36 years ago in June.
Sarah would have been what, like one and a half?
Oh, she was funny. She was so funny running around the hospital because I suppose I need to give you a little bit of background now. Anthony had a sudden infant death. And at the time, I didn't know first aid. So my mum told me, if there's any problem, you're 5 minutes in your car away from Kingston Hospital. So that was my training. It wasn't, you know, blow in their face, pump on their chest or do that sort of thing like I know now. That's why I became a first aid trainer. And I was passionate about first aid all through. And I'm especially paediatric first aid. You know, I've done that for 30 years. And I do it for nothing. I go into, like, you know, family centres and children's centres and teach paediatric first aid for nothing. And to the family when they ask
you.
You
do, yeah.
But we rushed him down to hospital and he was resuscitated by the hospital. But he was on a ventilator. And, you know, it was awful, awful life for us as a family, but more for your mum. You know, she had this little baby that she treasured, absolute treasured. I'd come down in the middle of the night because our toilet was downstairs. She'd be sitting there in the dark, cuddling Anthony. You know, she'd finished feeding him an hour ago, but she's still sitting down there, cuddling him and feeding. And, you know, he was a special little baby and absolute adore. And, you know, she had to go up the hospital, but she had a one-year-old little baby because Anthony was he was a mistake, but he was an absolute beautiful mistake. You know, I don't mean it in a horrible way. But your mum would go down the hospital in the morning and then have to come back and feed you and put you down for a little nap or whatever, and then go back in the afternoon, and she'd walk from New Malden to Kingston Hospital and then come back again and then walk down and come back again. Mm. She used to
because
like walking.
Anthony was on a ventilator for...
Well, for the first 2 or 3 weeks, he was on a ventilator and they struggled to get him off. But eventually they got him off and he went up to the ward. But he lived in a vegetative state for about 7 months before he passed away. That used to be a little... Oik, running around. Every nurse loved her. And she'd have 3 dummies hanging out of her mouth. And you wonder why your little ones do it
dummies.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have three or four dummies all hanging out your mouth. They all loved you and had you up on the counter. And
I remember mum saying they actually thought I had diabetes because I was always wanting juice.
Juice, yeah.
And they tested me because they're like, oh, you're in hospital anyway. But then it worked out. I was just hiding my juice cups everywhere. So when I'm asking for more juice.
Hoarding the juice cup.
Yeah.
Oh, you were a little terror, but you owned the hospital. It was so funny. And all the nurses were like your guardians up there. You know, they all knew you. They knew us. They were so good to us, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They were so good. But, so I suppose I was a bit embarrassed, but that's why I changed and made sure that I was home. I wanted to get home to see my children in bed. After having that experience of Anthony, I wanted to be home for you. Mm. It didn't matter about money. I didn't care about money. I knew we didn't have enough. I used to be embarrassed about your trainers. All the other kids would have Nike and we'd have to go to Shoe Fair in New Malden and get you these cheap Nick trainers. I was so embarrassed, but I'd rather have that and be home in the evening as a family. And I always ate in the evenings, or we did. And
because I was going to say that's one of the things that I really noticed. Like, because, I mean, I also come from a great family and a close family. But so there's a lot of similarities in my upbringing and Sarah's. But then there's also a lot of differences. And I think I was just really taken aback by how much you guys all did together and how close you were. And that even though you guys didn't have a lot of money, it just really didn't matter. No. And it just was not an issue at all. And like, you guys just could have fun. Whatever you were doing, you could have fun regardless of money. Mm. Didn't need to be at a theme park. Could just be going down the park or just anything. Like, and like, I just think, I think we've then taken a lot of those qualities and implied that in our family.
I think you do. Me and your mum are so proud of you as a family. I mean, I think, you know, however you come across on this podcast, I see the real Joel and the real Sarah, and you are very loving with each other.
Yeah, because you pulled us up. You said on some of the earlier episodes, you were like, you guys went in a little bit hard on each other, but obviously you know our banter, but obviously some people don't. So it's like we can have a bit of a back and forth like that, but then we're straight back to normal.
And, Dad,
and we have a heated debate.
He doesn't want people, you don't want people talking mean about us, so you also don't want.
Yeah, we have calmed it down a little bit.
I didn't want everybody to see that side because that's not you. You're actually very, very, very kind to each other and, you know, and I don't like Sarah being horrible to you.
No, I was going to say that. Yeah. Scoot over next to me a little bit more.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is what we say.
I mean, we're not going to be mean to each other. We're going to say it in love.
When I grew up, I love my childhood, but maybe I don't like my adulthood now anymore, okay?
Oh.
Yeah. Because when I grew up, I was daddy's girl.
Now I'm daddy's girl.
Yeah, you're more daddy's girl than her.
Yeah, exactly.
She wears the trousers.
Yeah, and now you're all really for Joel. You and Mum.
No, they're not for me.
If I go away, you help Joel out. Like that other day when we were arguing, I said about Joel not helping me, and you're all like, you and Mum, like, oh, but he's playing with the kids. And then I secretly found out that you did the two chores that I'd asked him to do. You did them anyway. But made out he did them.
So yeah, which I really appreciated them doing the chores and making it look like I had done them, because obviously that really saved me. But then I don't appreciate them telling you a couple of weeks later.
No, but I
that
didn't.
Kind of defeats the
that
point.
That wasn't
right?
me. That was your mum.
Your mum. My mum told me.
Rosie's sitting over
she
there.
Can't
she's,
keep
she
secrets
snitched.
From me.
She snitched
keep
on me.
From me.
No. No, but
I feel
I
like
think
we're gonna
what
get the lie detector test on you now and just find out if you love me or Joel more.
Oh, he loves you more. Of course he does. But I think what it is, it's not about who they love more. Obviously they love you more, but I think it's just about who they maybe empathize with more.
They're scared of me more.
Do you know what it is?
No, sometimes
Should
you
I
just...
tell you the true about that. I know you'll always love me. My relationship with you is one million.
To be fair, I think your two relationship needs more work than mine is yours. We're pretty solid.
We're good, mate. Don't worry about that. Like I've asked this whole thing of me saying how it is and then you'll leave and then Joel goes, you're a bit harsh today.
You know, it goes two ways.
Hard with me.
It goes two ways, doesn't it? Because you stick up for me, but sometimes I stick up for you.
Yes, absolutely.
And sometimes it's behind closed doors. I'm like, you know, I put myself in your shoes because I think, well, if Casey spoke to me like that, I'd feel like it's a little bit cutting. So I'm just like, do you know what? Take it easy on your dad. Take it easy on all the men in your life.
Do you know what?
It's like, it's you biddle women, you're all men haters. No,
it's just jokes. It's
no, it is
but,
jokes.
But do you know what? I do appreciate your honesty. And I'll give you an example here. We used to be foster carers. I think about 16 years we did foster caring or something like that. Your mum, after we lost Mickey, your mum had, she'd said, look, you know, I need to end this now. And I didn't want to give it up at that time. Mm. And I remember me, you and Emma were out and we were going to the theatre and we had a coffee beforehand. And you absolutely sort of gave it to me, but it was because of that. And you said, Dad, you're being selfish. You've got to think of Mum, what she wants. And although I was absolutely twisted, I want to wring your neck at the time.
Oh, I know that feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
High five there, son.
Oh, you're closer to high five.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. High five.
I was so about your advice. But that's the thing about myself. I know I'll go away and I'll always absorb that. And I think you're very similar to that. You know, you'll take the advice and you'll think about it. And we then stop fostering. But that was because of what you said and how you made me feel. And I appreciated it in the end. Mm. So you are very honest.
She was right, though. Like, this is the thing. She's very good at sort of seeing clearly into situations and being like, even though this might be a tough decision, it's the right decision. And I think looking back, like, you guys were just, you were still grieving and broken after losing Mickey. So, you know, it was the right thing to do. But yeah, sometimes
I think it was.
Sometimes, annoyingly, Sarah's got to be the one to tell you the right thing to do, isn't she?
Had she not told me, I'd been going on, and your mum was, I mean, your mum's sort of, she always bears my feelings at heart. And had I not wanted to give it up, or, I mean, it might have come to a point where she said, look, I've got to. But at that time, she wouldn't have done. And how long would we have gone on with her having to do something that she really, really couldn't do anymore?
Yeah.
You know, or probably the same as, you know, if you can't do a good job, you don't want to do it, do you? And maybe we would have still been doing it for a while longer.
And her heart was broken, so to be looking after other children when she couldn't have her child, I totally got it. I think maybe that's where it was. It's like, being a mum, I just knew I could always, because when Mickey did pass away, that was my way of dealing with it. In my head was, if Mum and Dad can get up every morning, then I can. Like, you know, we all lost somebody that day, but I always thought, like, the relationship of a parent is harder than, you know.
Well, that's where I feel that grief, you're very lonely in grief, very, very lonely. It's your journey. It's the way that you deal with it. It doesn't differ in every person's heart, whether it's your mum, your dad, your son, your daughter, whoever, your favourite aunt, even your pet to a certain degree. I mean, yeah, I couldn't stand the thought of losing Buddy. But, you know, grief is a very lonely journey because nobody can live it for you. And you have to live it your way. You have to go through the emotions. You know, the first 2 years, actually, it made me physically ill. I don't know whether you remember, but I actually was getting these real bad dizzy spells and I was almost falling over. You know, but it is the grief. I've got an analogy, and I think it's like carrying a massive, heavy rucksack on your back. Throughout life, that will never get lighter. But hopefully you get stronger in order to carry it.
That's really good way of putting it.
So that's how I feel. I feel me and your mum, we've got stronger now. But you've got to let these emotions, however it is. And me and your mum, because we had the loss of Anthony 36 years ago, we learnt to support each other in a good way. In them days, like, if I had a down moment, your mum would leave me alone and let me. And sometimes it's not all of that about come up and there, you know, let me give you a cuddle. Oh, you know, are you okay? Sometimes you have to just draw back and go and have a cry. And even to this day, I mean, I think today's Friday. I think on Wednesday night, I went at 3 o'clock into the spare room and cried my eyes out. But that's what I do, you know. And I'm sure your mum does the same, but we don't smother each other. Mm. We give each other room. And I think that's a really important thing when you're grieving. And how long does grief last?
Yeah.
I think,
so for people that obviously don't watch our YouTube, because we talk about Mickey a lot on our YouTube, don't we? Obviously, like, so sadly, 13 years ago, he had a motorbike accident, which is really sad, but also just angry because he'd only just got the bike that day. So it just feels so unfair, doesn't it? I think that's also part of it, feeling really unfair. But I was just going to say, like, it took me on to thinking about, like, parent, like, that gut instinct. Like, you were driving home and I wasn't there, but Emma was there. And I remember her telling me, like, there was blue lights. You couldn't see whether it was an ambulance, a police car, nothing. You knew nothing. But you pulled over and you just, I could be getting this.
Well, I went in the wrong direction. Behind us was blue lights. And I just had this cold feeling. And Emma was there. And she even said, Dad, it's just blue lights. Because I said, that's Mickey. And she went, Dad, it's just blue lights. It could be anybody. Mm. Didn't you hear me? And I turned the vehicle around. Or we dropped our friend Sue off. And when we came up, we should have turned right to go home. But I turned left to go towards the two blue lights. And even when we got to the scene of the accident, we couldn't see any sign of Mickey or the motorbike because his motorbike was over the other side of over all of the emergency vehicles. And at the time, I was a police officer for Surrey, and it was Surrey Police that were dealing with it. And I knew whoever it was, they had sadly passed away at that time by the way that all of the emergency services were acting and parked the vehicles. And there was a car over on the right-hand side in this garden or in this front of a place. I think it was a clinic or something, and it was in the front. And I'm screaming at the phone, Mickey, answer the phone. And I'm trying to ring him, and it's just going to his answer phone, and of course he couldn't answer it. And then we realised that he was underneath the car where he'd sadly passed away under the car.
What? How did you first realise it was Mickey that had the accident?
Because didn't you go...
Was it not his trainer that you saw?
No, I think that was... So you ended up... You knew it was him, and I think you got taken actually into one of our friends' houses that didn't know it was my dad at the time.
That was your friend's dad.
And he was took so you kind. In, but then Emma went outside and called Mum. Mum came, and didn't Mum and Emma...
Well, Emma called your mum and said, at this time... She was still believing it wasn't Mickey because we had no...
I mean, she was more worried that you seemed a little bit crazy.
I was going,
She's saying, Dad's acting like this, but we don't know anything.
No, and I eventually asked this guy who took me in the house, is it a motorbike, mate? And he went, yeah. And so I'm sort of freaking out. I'm thinking he's over the other side and I can't see him or whatever. And I don't want to see him. Can I go past? And he took me in his house. And I remember crawling up the stairs, I wanting to be sick in his lavatory sort of thing. And I come down, I went out, I come back in, didn't know where to go. And then this guy shouted at the police, or someone shouted at the police, crying out loud, let this family know what's going on. And this police officer came over and said, look, I'm really sorry to tell you that it is... Mm-hmm. Michael, that's...
But it's because he'd only just got that bike that day that his insurance wasn't hadn't...
Well,
he'd
his name went on the logbook.
It hadn't gone...
On the logbook.
Gone through, so they couldn't... took a while to figure it out, didn't it, I think?
They had to go over to the original owner. And we found out there. And then somehow I got home. I think we were taken home in a police car. And this police officer was so nice. Do you remember him?
Mm.
He was making tea for everybody and stuff.
Well, I just remember.
Yeah. Oh, God, I just.
It was just, horrendous.
I remember so I just got home from the gym. So Sarah's at home. I just got home from the gym. And I remember, and this is so many strange things happened that day, like you instinctively knew that it was Mickey just from seeing the blue lights. Sarah had a call from my dad while I was at the gym saying, I don't know what's about to happen. Yeah. Something bad is about to happen in the family. I'm praying for everyone. Lock your doors. I don't know what it is. He was living in Spain at the time. He wasn't even in the country.
In the middle of a mountain as well. It wasn't even like, it was just insane. Just, yeah, like, where I think about.
And I come home.
Football, wasn't he?
Yeah. And I came home and Sarah was like, oh, I've had this really strange call from your dad. He's saying that, you know, something bad's going to happen. Lock your doors. And he'd really scared you. And I was a bit annoyed. I was like, why would he do that? Why has he scared you like that? Like, that's. And then I remember walking in the kitchen to get a drink and literally walked in the kitchen, got a phone call from Ryan, who's Sarah's sister's husband. And
you came in.
He just told me what happened. I came into you and I just.
The first thing I thought was because your dad said, lock the doors. In my head, it's you've gone out and there's something. I didn't even think of anything outside of the house at first. I could just see on your face, and I'm thinking.
You were like, tell me what's happened, what's happened. And I was trying to get the words out. It was just like, I just said, it's your brother. And he's had an accident and he's passed away. And I mean, it was, oh God, struggling. And then obviously it was horrendous. The whole thing was just awful.
Telling me, and obviously that hit me like out of shock, out of everywhere. Like, it was horrendous. Then I remember crying, and then Emma called me. So for a split second, I had hope that it was kind of wrong. Mm. So then when she then confirmed it, I broke down again. And then I remember you driving me to mum and dad's, and I remember getting out of the car and you'd parked up the road and I ran in front of you. And all I was doing was out loud saying, please let me through, please let me through, please let me through. Getting home, and then when I see my mum and dad, it like hit me for the third time. I remember feeling like a punch every time of like, no, this is actually like.
But I've got to say, your mum and dad, they were superb to us as a family. We huddled round their house every day, and I needed that.
You know, it was. I needed. We lived there.
You.
Lived. Yeah. We were renting a
flat. Yeah, you. Yeah. Yeah. It was. Your mum and dad's.
But your mum and dad would come and bring us food, and
yeah,
we kind of as a family.
She cooked for us, didn't she? A lot.
Our family, we just knew if you got some sleep when you did wake up, it was get up, come to ours, be together.
Every day. And it.
For two
and
weeks,
I needed
it was
that.
Like that, wasn't it? Every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just felt really sad for you kids, you know, and for your mum. Mm. You know, I just felt really deeply hurt for you, as well as myself.
Yeah,
but
I think we all did.
I think that's the thing is everyone, we were all grieving, you know, Mickey, losing Mickey, but we were also grieving for each other's grief.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like Sarah was grieving for herself losing her brother, but she was also grieving for her mum and dad losing their son. Mm. And it was just like,
he was an amazing lad, wasn't he? Mm.
From pretty much the moment that I met your family, I quickly came to realize that Mickey was the golden child of the family. He was the youngest, right? And oh my God, I've never seen anyone get away with more stuff than Mickey. So the first time that I met Mickey, me and Sarah were in your front room. We were playing cards, right? We didn't have iPhones back then. We're playing cards, right? So Mickey comes in. He's what, 11, 12? 11. Maybe even younger, like 10.
Younger than that, yeah.
Right? Keep it in mind, he'd never met me before. I'm a teenager, right? You think he'd have maybe a little bit of respect about him. He comes in. And he goes, I want to play with you guys. And Sarah's going, no, you can't play with us. I'm like, why are you being so mean to him? Like, he wants to come and play. Like, let him play.
Like,
let him play. She's like, trust me, you're going to regret it. You will regret it. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to regret playing a little bit of cards with your younger brother. So he goes, I've got a game. So I give him the cards. He literally launches them in the air. He goes, 52 card pickup and walks out the door. My jaw was on the floor, right?
Sarah gets off the sofa, starts scooping up.
What? I'm like, don't get him back here to clean him up. She's like, no, it's fine. I'll just do it like a beaten housewife. Like, just this. And like, that was kind of my introduction into Mickey of like, That he was cheeky.
You spoiled him. Like,
you all spoiled him.
There was no fight.
You all spoiled him. He was...
I remember getting in really big trouble because it was a computer game and it was my turn. But because he wanted another go, we argued. But I got in trouble. Even though it's so fair. So fair. And I remember walking to school once and my friend being like, Sarah, what's that red mark around your neck? I'm like, oh, Mickey strangled me in my school tie.
Like, it was just another day.
Oh, just, you know, just Mickey.
No, but he was cheeky, but he was funny and then he was
like,
lovable.
Because as a little kid, he was like short and chubby. And then he grew up to be really strong and really tall. So obviously we had Casey and Grace before he passed. And he used to be like, who wants to see mummy upside down? And they used to cheer. And I'd be like, no, Mickey, don't do it. He'd come and grab me and literally flip me upside down and shake me because he was so strong and heavy.
Yeah,
I was so skinny back then. He'd just like, it was just...
Well, yeah.
He adored the
He used
girls.
To do that to your mum as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he used to wrestle her to the floor. I mean, it was so funny. But not long before his accident, we always had these wrestling bouts. And I always used to win. I was always stronger than him. I was the martial artist. I was always stronger. And the last year, he used to get so strong and he used to get the better of me. I used to have to hurt him or try and beat him. But the very last one, we started in the kitchen and I don't really remember the kitchen. Then you had the dining area and then when it ended up in the front room somehow. I mean, I was absolutely exhausted. I couldn't do it anymore. And he said, ha ha. And he had me pinned down and he spat.
Oh.
And apparently your mum used to do it to him. Well, not apparently, she did. But what you do is you let it dribble out and he gets close to their face. And you go, and suck it back up.
Oh, so gross.
And he kept, don't you dare. I'm trying to be really serious. Don't you dare, Mickey. I'm really serious now. And he goes,
oh. Now, the funniest thing is when you went away and you gave him your credit card for emergencies only.
Oh my
God. Well, his emergency only was to take his girlfriend on a little weekend holiday on your credit card.
So he rings me up. I can't remember. I think we were in Spain with you guys or somewhere like that. And he rings me up, or we were in Greece, I think. But he rings me up and he said, Dad, you know that emergency credit card? It's in the safe. I mean, yeah. He said, I've got a crack in the windscreen in my car and I need to go to work. Can you let me have the credit card? I need a windscreen. Yeah, okay. And I gave him the code of the safe. And he took the credit card just to literally buy this windscreen or replacement windscreen. So I didn't check take the bill when it came in at the end of that month for some reason. But then the following month, I looked at the bill and I went, what the heck? It's like 700 and something pound. I went,
it's expensive windscreen.
How on earth has it got 700? That's wrong. And then I looked and it's all in Cornwall and all fuel and caravan park. And
they had a great time.
He had a great time. And he took my expense. Car to boot. You know, the Rax car that you SOS'd for me.
Yeah.
That's another story, isn't it? But you got that black Mondeo car back for me. He loved that car and he took Kerry to the wherever it was, to Cornwall. And
what did he say when you told him?
Did he get into trouble? Nah,
no.
Not really.
For probably about 5 seconds. Literally. Nah. I remember I used to think, come on, someone's gonna tell him off for that. Come on.
No, because the thing is, when we were growing up, Dad would, his thing was that he would give you a talking of like life and
a dad lecture. Casey and Grace know about them.
A proper dad lecture. Us girls knew just to like smile and wave. Like just like yeah. And the more you do that, the quicker it ends. Mickey would not. He would argue back. He would say his piece. So they just go on, and even I can remember my mum just like, just accept, just listen, just smile, just nod, like take it. So it just stops.
And he gave you advice towards the end, didn't he? He said, what I do now is I look over Dad's shoulder and I just look over his shoulder and it makes it look as if I'm looking at him. But what about your mum, like with him, right? This is typical of how your mum treated him, right? So he would get a parking fine. So he'd bring it round, give it, put it on the table. She wouldn't tell me much about it.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd pay this parking fine, like 60 quid, whatever it is. Okay. Not a word said. So she'd rather pay that rather than it escalate and it get to a problem. But that's not my point. So he comes round and he nicks something out of the fridge that was meant to be for her, you know, and takes some stuff out of the fridge. So now she's having a go at him. And he went, hang on a minute, Mum. You have a go at me about a fridge, taking something out of the fridge.
Chocolate bar,
but,
probably.
Yeah, yeah. But yet you give me, like, you know, umpteen times I've given you a parking ticket and you've just paid it. It don't make sense.
Listen, don't mess
with Ros and her chocolate.
No, any woman that I know, just don't take their chocolate.
I know.
That's worth a fight.
He was very spoiled, but, you know.
I suppose as well that probably, well, I don't know, you can tell me, but maybe that played in part of losing Anthony before Mickey.
It was Mickey coming and being...
Mm. I feel like it's even gone on to now because obviously I don't remember Anthony, but you losing Anthony and us losing Mickey, I feel like now we've got that with then you... You've got such a great relationship with the grandchildren that I feel like they're now that special.
I was going to say, like, you know, I feel like you and Roz, like, your grandchildren are your world, your life. It gives you purpose.
I mean, me, mostly. Yeah, firstly, God. Me, and then it's the grandchildren.
No, but, like, I don't think I've ever really experienced, like, your mum and dad and the grandkids. It's just the best relationship, isn't it? I love the relationship that, like, Casey's relationship. I mean, all of them, but, like, say Casey being the eldest, being a teenager, you know.
No, because what's
normally
nice...
you sort of lose touch a little bit of your grandparents when you become a teenager because you just want to be out doing whatever. Oh my God, she absolutely loves you guys.
I think that's what it is. It's because you love the kids, but Casey's got to an age where she's showing it back in her own way of, like, coming to see you. She'll drive to your house.
Absolutely.
I always
think that their cuddles are real.
Mm.
You know, it's not just a fake cuddle. It's a real cuddle. I feel that we are loved.
Oh, you
I
are.
Mean, more your mum than... No.
What about my cuddles? What are they saying?
Your cuddles
you feel
are
those cuddles,
your
don't
cuddles
you?
Are lovely.
Oh, gosh, yeah, guys, can we cut the bromance, please?
No,
I do. I think there's even, like, a little bit of a pressure that we... Not a pressure, but as in, like... We now just idolize the kids so much that there's a fear in us, I think, that something could ever go wrong. No, like when Casey's rang, like my heart races when that phone, like, so yesterday my phone rang from Casey and I knew she was on a boat. She told me she got a private boat for her and her friend and my phone rang and it was her. Now, straight away, I knew there was something wrong. I was like, they're on a boat. Why is she calling me on a boat? If it was because it's beautiful, she'd be FaceTiming me. So my heart is now going. She's not replying to me. I'm ringing Joel. He's not replying.
Casey FaceTimed me and there was a problem. She had a sea urchin stuck in
her foot.
She'd
trodden a sea urchin. So thankfully, it was only that.
I know there's a problem because she only rings me if there is a problem.
But straight away, I've gone, like, in my head, I'm like 0 to 100. I'm like, she's on a boat. She's been kidnapped.
Even though she, like, because the last time she called me is because she had food poisoning and she was crying and she was really ill. But even when she calls me, my mind doesn't go there. Like, I'm just so oblivious to stuff like that, that I'm just like, oh, Casey's calling. And it was just a
little
problem.
No, I knew it. Like,
well, you know how... You know, you only know too well that experiences that we've been through as a family, it's been, you know, and you've probably spoken about little Soph, you know, from time to time.
Yeah.
But you know how I reacted to Sophie when she was born. I feel so guilty about the beginning of Sophie. The first 2 years, I drew back. I honestly thought something could happen.
Yeah.
I thought something could happen. And I couldn't handle that in my mental capacity after losing two boys.
This is only a couple of years after Mickey had passed away.
It was, yeah. It was so close after Mickey. And I needed to protect my own sanity because I just thought, can't handle it.
Mm.
You know, you do handle these things. And I think as parents of Sophie, you taught me a lot about how to accept things, I remember you telling me about Sophie. I was stopping with my sister, wasn't I? You remember?
Don't remember, no.
And you said whatever it was about the diagnosis. And I started crying. And in the background, Joel said, look, you know, let's have some faith. Let's put it where it is. She'll be fine. And I thought, bloody hell, you're right. And you've been right. She's like, but I feel so guilty about her first 2 years. You know, the way that I...
But yeah, back. I mean, I could see how it was affecting you, the thought of losing Sophie. I mean, because it was touch and go the first few...
It was awful.
2-3 years. And you, I could see it in your face, and you almost would look at her with these sad eyes as if
that's what
it's
you
already
used to say.
Happened.
I remember once saying to you, please stop looking at her with your sad eyes. You'd come in and because I can't. I was like, I can't.
No,
but we
no, that's
we
when
had
I realized.
To we had to draw a line in the sand and say, do you know what? We're gonna she because she was given a short life expectancy by the doctor, and we just decided, you know what? That's his opinion. We aren't gonna accept that. Mm. We're still gonna have a vision for Sophie and a vision for her future, and we're not gonna now because it almost felt like we could now just almost cut short her, our vision of her life. Because when you look at your kids, you don't think you don't think they're not gonna be here forever. So we were just like, that's it. Like we have to make a decision that we still continue to believe for Sophie, and we still have a vision for her future.
Kind
we don't
the way
stop
manifesting,
it.
Putting it out in the universe, saying what you
it really was
you
that,
want, and that's what we
and that's what we all that's what we all did, even on the
and
days
it's
when
funny
didn't.
Because when you we say about like that gut feeling, I remember we had a hospital appointment with her, and she had to be put to sleep to have like tubes and testing done. And I remember the nurse coming over and saying it's all done and it's all gone through, and everything was fine, and I then got this anxiety feeling. I'd never had anxiety before that. I got this major anxiety feeling. I said, Joel, something's wrong. You're like, no. The nurse has told us. I said, no, I can feel it in my heart. There's something wrong. Something's happening. You're like, no. And my mum and your mum had called to check in, and you went and told them everything's fine. And I couldn't because I was like, I know there's not. And then the nurse came back over and was like, oh, the doctor's coming up to talk to you. And I said, that's not good, is it? And she said, no, like, because she was a bit caught off guard. I think that the doctor was coming up, and the doctor came and sat with us and said, Sophie's not breathing very well. She's like in a really bad way. And back then I was like, she used to do this thing where if she was so upset, she couldn't breathe very well. So I said, let me go down there. They're like, you can't.
Because this was in the recovery ward where you normally wouldn't go down there. They would bring them up once they've come around.
You can't go in the recovery room. You're not allowed in there. I was like, no, honestly, like, if I can calm her down, you might find that she'll breathe better, please. Like, and I think they were so desperate, they let us go down. So we went into recovery, and honestly, it was...
Nothing could have prepared us for what... We sent down a child who, although she had her problems, she was a healthy child. What we were met with in the recovery room was a child that was hanging on for their life. Oh, my God. I didn't think I was going to cry. She looked like she was hanging on by a thread. We just couldn't
she
believe it.
She couldn't even lift her eyes to even
look
at
her. Oh, God,
like,
it was awful.
It was horrendous.
It was so bad. And then, but...
Don't you two she, cry.
Yeah, no, but obviously, you know, she...
No, but,
she
I'm, did, no, but the reason I'm saying
She ended up in ICU, but then she was fine. Yeah. But she just had a really bad reaction to... I mean, we don't even know... No one even knows what happened. Because it was basically she was just having a camera down... to check her airways because she had like a floppy larynx. So it was just it's a very routine thing.
She ended up so fragile. No, because she's had that since she's been.
She's had anaesthetic since, and it could have just been that they irritated her airways. I don't know what.
And
she was so weak.
She was a weak baby back then, so it could have just been like.
But that's
that feeling of that. Just.
But look how
knowing.
She is now. She takes everything in her little stride, and she picks up on you, and she says, I'm okay.
Yeah.
She's an incredibly strong
young girl.
She
words it in a way.
I got this.
I can do this.
Yeah. She's such a gorgeous little girl.
She is. And I feel like we're out of the woods with her in terms of her health. Her health is amazing. Like, there's no worries that we have with her. I mean, she has like severe developmental delay, but that's not life threatening.
Yeah, even that's like,
she used to choke a lot. She used to have an unsafe swallow. Eventually we will do a podcast episode and go into more details, because people keep asking us
I was talking
about the box tissues
the other day, and people didn't. I was saying like how I obviously she had the tube in, her feeding tube, and I learned to put it in because we were going on holiday and they said we couldn't go, and I just felt so bad for Casey and Grace, because obviously this year anyway of Sophie's first little life, we'd been in and out of hospital taking it in turns, so family had kind of helped a lot of Casey and Grace, and I was like, no, we need this holiday.
You were so strong.
So I learned to do it. I don't know how I did it.
Putting the tube into Sophie's nose was so traumatic for her and for us. You learned to do that was just amazing.
Put her in between my legs, and I'd literally hold my breath until I've got it in. And when I did it, I breathe. And then I'd feel sweaty and I'd be like, oh my gosh. But it was...
We thought you were incredible with that. Absolutely incredible.
Totally. But again, the things you do for your kids, because I only did that for Casey and Grace. If it was a holiday for you and me and the bait, like if we hadn't had Casey and Grace, I wouldn't have done it. But I just thought, I can't let Casey and Grace miss out. I just couldn't.
We've never even really, I don't know how much we've ever even spoke to Casey and Grace about how that period of time affected them, or how much they remember about it, or if the concerns or...
Well, Grace didn't, because when we had that YouTube video and we mentioned about Grace, Sophie's life expectancy, she cried. Because you just assume we don't...
Also, you try and protect them from certain things. So we probably didn't share that much.
We didn't share it, but then you think over time they must... You don't know.
Like, yeah.
It wasn't a thought-out thing, obviously.
When things are said, it jumps out as being real sometimes, doesn't it? And it's a bit of a shock that you actually hear it now. Sometimes, I think your two girls are so adjusted and so well brought up, both Casey and Grace. I don't feel that they are permanently scarred or affected by it all, because of the way that they are. They're such beautiful feeling girls, aren't they?
They are. They're good kids. I don't know how we managed that, because we were like 18 when we had them. How have we managed that?
Yeah, but I think
we winged it.
Genuinely though, I really honestly think because of my upbringing of just thinking family, and because even I had Casey and Grace before Mickey passed, family meant so much to us. I think that. And also, I grew up having to do chores and help around the house. And I've made the girls do that. I think there's something about being a team as a family.
And now I've been brought up since becoming an adult by Sarah to do chores around the house. But,
Oh, bless. Absolute beautiful family you got. And good family values.
You too.
Good family values.
You too, but you're still not moving in with us.
There's an ongoing joke, which isn't a joke, about Roz and Pete moving in with us. It's not a joke. I think your dad wants it more than your mum. Is it? Yeah, she's nodding. She's saying, yeah, is she?
Yeah, well.
But it's more mum we would have than dad. Mum at least babysits.
Yeah, but your dad's a good handyman.
Hold on.
Your dad will hang a picture.
Honey, we need to talk. This one's for my dad.
Oh, this is aimed at your dad?
This is aimed at my dad. You get a little rest, babes.
Goodness. Right, don't mind me. I'll just be over here just enjoying a little break from
No,
so the conversation we're going to have
is... you're going to be outspoken and... Yeah.
You know this. I say it to you. So if I have a weekend away with Joel, quite regularly,
too regular.
No, it's not too regular. But and I ask you, if I just say about babysitting and you go, yeah, me and your mum would love to do it. I said, no, I'm not asking you, because you'll say yeah, and then mum does it on her own and you stay back with the dog. Because obviously you can't have the dog in the house because of Joel. You're like, no, I will help this time. I'm like, are you sure? Because I feel really bad leaving mum with all the kids. Yeah. We go, come back, and you don't really help mum.
That's so, not true, is it?
Basically, what I'm saying is we want to book another weekend away. Can you promise that you will help? Quick,
no,
I might get a
do you know what? I think your dad, it's almost like your dad offers up your mum to babysit. Don't worry, your mum will babysit. And I also think that your dad likes to have the house to himself. I don't know what he does there. Maybe he walks around naked. I'm not sure, right?
But they leave the blinds open quite a lot.
That's why I'm always driving past when I'm alone.
I get complaints from the neighbours.
But I feel like you like to have the house to yourself sometimes.
I think you're both wrong. Because I spend a lot of time around your house.
Mum, oh, you do. But as soon as we're gone, you just leave Ros there by herself.
That's not true. The last time you had a little moan at me, a little pop at me. And
doesn't sound like Sarah.
God.
Speaking her mind.
Yeah, you got quite...
No, what did I say?
When you said about me going home, Mum had all six children.
Yeah, because you because she had Emma and Ryan's children kids as well. Yeah,
I know, but that wasn't the point. The point was I needed to go home because we didn't have a dog sitter, and I stayed to about 12 o'clock that night, and she's up in bed with Sophie, and I don't. And you said about well, you could have slept on the couch.
No, there wasn't the.
It was.
No,
it
there's something else. But I can't remember what it is.
No.
It wasn't about sleeping over.
It was. It was.
What it was? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, but
she ain't going to say because she wants to be quiet over there because she knows she's not going to stick up for me.
Mum in the background over there. But anyway, yeah. One of the funny stories.
I take it on board. But if I haven't got a dog sitter, I do go back for the
All right,
dog.
So basically what you're
saying
is...
You just want a bit of alone time, you and Buddy.
When I need a babysitter, I've also got sort of a dog sitter out. That can be sorted.
No, okay. look, because he wants See? To go home and be with
no,
Buddy.
No, but what you're saying is you and Mum will babysit for a weekend. Mum's like, what? And I'm going to get you a dog sitter because I can find the dog sitter easier than people looking after my kids.
Oh, that's all right. That's okay. I don't mind babysitting. I spent a lot of time and I gave your Mum a lot of help.
The last time you did, I agree. But
that's not how you told me at the end of it.
There was something.
Because we had a little falling out, didn't we? We had a little bit of a at each other.
Yeah, but I can't remember what it was. It's really annoying me because I know.
Because I spent more time than I would want to.
Yeah, see?
You guys love being come around our house, don't you? You guys come around all the time. And I think we've said before, because we've had dilemmas sent in about, my mother-in-law and this and that. And I'm like, I can't relate. I was like, I get on so well with you guys. And I love it when you guys come around. And you guys come around all the time. Sometimes too much. No, I'm joking. No, but it's so nice. Yeah, it really is nice.
Sometimes, you know, you're in your house too much.
Yeah.
You need to.
No, because as soon as we leave, you go home for Buddy. No, but it is not. It is. I think it is quite a special, like it is. It seems like it's probably more rare than it is common.
But it's also us with your extended family.
We're all just one big happy family, like the Brady Bunch.
Well, we've been on a couple of cruises together as a whole big sort of big group, haven't we? And we get on with your. I'm friends with your dad, and like your mum is absolute treasure, and all your aunts and uncles, they're great, aren't they?
They're all right.
Which is why we can't all have Christmas together, because there's way too many
of us. There's way too many of us.
Thanks for tuning into Pete's podcast. Make sure you hit the subscribe button.
Thanks very much for being our first guest.
That
and
was
guys,
deep. That was deep today.
It was a rollercoaster of emotions. There was tears, there was laughter, and wow, what a rollercoaster.
There was yawning from my mum.
Yeah.
Joke.
She's asleep on the sofa over there. Guys, we're here 6 p.m. every Tuesday. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a comment, a rating and a review would be incredible. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.